Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. Here we are, ready to do another great show for you. So you know what I'm going to say. Let's get to it.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
Mr. Connor, how are you, sir?
Hi, David.
How you doing?
Terrific.
Wonderful. So tell me about, I've got two-part question. I'd like to hear, would you please tell me about Friday's trade and then about the rest of the week?
I most certainly will. The Friday's trade started off pretty rough. Futures weren't too bad when I got out of bed, but then as the economic reports started to come in, they got worse and worse. The Dow was actually down about 170 points shortly after the open, but had a very, very strong Friday afternoon and closed down 40 points on the day at 14,565. That's a drop of 13 points for the week.
So another, when you put it all together, point to point, not a big week.
Yeah, definitely an increase in volatility for the week, but the Dow down only 13 points. The NASDAQ, the tech-heavy NASDAQ, did not fare quite as well, down 21 points on Friday's trade to close at 3203, off 64 points on the week. That's a 2% drop or so, which is a little bit more meaningful. Tech has really not participated in this recent rally, but from my perspective, I think we'll start to see some sector rotation perhaps in the early part of the summer.
Maybe into tech?
Into tech, into industrials, into some of these areas that just are not participating. We'll have to see money start to come out of the profitable areas and go into the cheap areas, and that's what they call sector rotation.
Okay.
For the S&P's part, off 7 points on Friday's trade, was much, much, much worse earlier. Closed at 1553 on the day, and that is off 16 points for the week, so not too big of a deal there. Looking at the commodities complex, a much-needed strong day for the gold bugs, up $26 an ounce to 1578. Oil off about a third of a dollar at 92.90. Yields on 10s fell sharply at 1.694, and we saw some weakness in the dollar. It will cost $1.30 to buy a euro.
Do you happen to have, or maybe give me an idea of what the 10-year treasuries fell for the whole week?
I'm going to just say this sort of from memory. I'll say it fell about probably 10% from 180 to 169.
Okay. Right, so that to me is significant.
Almost all on Friday's trade.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting. So we got kind of a mixed bag, but when you put it all together for the week, modest.
Well, and even from my perspective, and you know, I'm not generally prone to optimism, but the market really absorbed a lot of bad news.
It was very resilient. That's the word, right?
And really, if it was looking for an excuse to sell off in a precipitous way, I think it certainly would have taken advantage of the preceding week to have done so. We did get the unemployment figure on Friday, which was disappointing. U.S. employers hired at the slowest pace in 9 months for March. We added only 88,000 jobs. We were looking for 200,000 jobs, so that was a very disappointing number.
Which I'm surprised the market didn't react stronger to.
Well, it did in the morning, but then I think we're in the situation where bad news is good news and good news is good news, because as the unemployment picture does not brighten appreciably, it increases the likelihood of extended quantitative easing.
Okay, so if it's bad news, the money keeps flowing. If it's good news, then, well,
and
it's good news.
Right, so unemployment rate itself fell to 7.6. That's sort of a statistical anomaly a little bit there. The number was not a good number that we had. Earlier this week, we had some precursors to that report in the form of the private sector ADP report on Wednesday, which was disappointing, and Thursday's weekly jobless claims report, which was also disappointing. So not good news as far as the jobs go. Just to sort of give you a little bit of context around that, we did have some revisions to previous months. February was revised up to 268,000 jobs created, so that was from 236, a good revision there. January revised up from 119,000 to 148,000. So those are jobs that are technically created. You can, if you want to, add those on top of the 88,000 that we got in March. It makes it look maybe a little bit more palatable. The participation rate fell to a 34-year low of 63.3%. And the broader measure, the real unemployment rate, fell to 13.8% from February's
14.3%. Okay, so a mixed bag.
Yeah, most of the blame is being placed on the sequester, as well as the payroll tax cut expiration. So most of the jobs that were created were in the services and healthcare sectors, and a lot of jobs lost in retail. 24,000 jobs for the month lost in retail, and the post office cut 12,000 workers last month, too. So that's where some of the negative side of it is coming from.
Okay, so good rundown for what happened with the market for the Friday's trade and for the week. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and I will ask Scott if he will stay with us a little longer, as we like to do a wrap of the market and talk about some of the major headlines and also some of the stuff that you may have missed. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
And we are back. All right, Scott. So I've got a quick run around the world, if you will indulge. Let's see what we've got here. Where am I looking? Well, first of all, let's look at some of the year-to-date changes that are interesting. Brazil jumps off the page, down over 10% year-to-date.
Yeah, Brazil, I'm going to tell you a little bit more in-depth about Brazil in a little while
here. Okay.
They're very dependent on natural resources and particularly shipping those natural resources to China. So with prices down quite a bit and a little bit of weakness in Chinese economic reports, that's really where that's coming from.
Okay, and then we've got a slide year-to-date for Italy, off 7%. Spain, I am surprised, they're off 4%. Surprised that it's not more.
I'm surprised Italy's not more.
Yeah, they both are still having trouble. And Spain says what? We don't have any problems. And Italy says we've got problems. So
Italy says we've got problems and there's no way we're going to solve them.
So what do you want from me?
Right.
Right. Who else? India off 5. We've talked about that. They're just not getting the outsourcing they used to. You mentioned China. China's off 2% year to date. Not a huge number, but the U.S. market, by contrast, we are up. Where are we at here? They've changed the layout here. I'm using my Wall Street Journal. Here we go. The S&P 500 up year to date about 9.5%. Mid caps up 10. Small caps up 9. The Dow up over 11.5% year to date versus some of these international players that just are not as performing as strongly as we are. The only other ones that are in our ballpark is Switzerland, who's out in the lead at 13.8, which we know is a comparison to the rest of Europe and what they do. And then the big winner right now is Japan with their super easy money. Little Ben in Japan is doing his part, and they are up over 21.5% year to date.
Yeah, 6 or 7% of that just this past week too, as the central bank has made a couple of announcements that confirmed the suspicion that they were going to be extremely aggressive in their easing.
And they are at what, quantitative easing part 40?
They've been doing it for decades at this point. But it's really taking hold now. They finally got aggressive enough that it's starting to take hold. So we'll see what happens there. A couple things to look forward to on the week ahead. We have earnings season kicking off on Monday, earnings from Alcoa. Really, I think the most meaningful earnings for the week will come at the end of the week in the form of J.P. Morgan and Wells Fargo. Nobody really cares about Alcoa anymore. It's just kind of a traditional thing. The Fed FOMC is meeting this week, so we'll see those minutes on Wednesday. Thursday, of course, the jobless claims. Friday, in addition to those earnings, a couple of big reports, PPI, retail sales, consumer sentiment, business inventory reports. So Friday should be a meaningful day for the week ahead.
Very good, very good. I had a couple things I wanted to ask you about. Our report that we had monitored on MF Global, John Corzine, well, apparently they've finished some sort of analysis that the bankruptcy trustee did, and they have placed much of the blame for the failure of that entity, MF Global, on Mr. Corzine.
They did. Yep. The trustee, Louis Free, formerly of the FBI, said basically there was no risk control and it's Mr. Corzine is at fault.
So they're, I'm sure, going to follow through and follow up on that, and he'll be facing some sort of appropriate punishment?
Well, we'll see. They're still trying to get money back to the people who had money that got frozen in MF Global, and it's probably going to be in the vicinity of maybe 20 cents on the dollar. Or something.
Really?
Like
that low?
Somewhere.
Okay. I thought it was going to be higher than that. Wow. Okay, Lisa, we need to take a break, right? Lisa says take a quick break. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we are back, and Scott has more to share with us. So, Scott, do tell.
I have lots of just sort of goofball things. But I do want to talk about some things that happened around the world before I get to those.
That are serious.
Yeah, a little bit more serious. You know, this Cyprus situation seems to be more or less behind us, at least from the market perspective. But we're starting to get a little bit more of the postmortem, if you will, and find out really what happened over there. You know, they froze the bank accounts on a Saturday and basically told all the citizens, You can't get any money out. You can't get cash out. You're not going to be able to get cash out for several days, and even then, it's going to be a limited basis. Well, now we're finding out that the Cypriot president's family moved 21 million euros to London several days before the bank accounts were closed. Apparently, the Cyprus bank branches in London and other places overseas did not close. So those who were able to have a relationship with those banks or even go to those banks had full access, unlike the citizenry who couldn't get any money. So I think there will be some fallout from that. As you know, the finance minister resigned last week, so that's probably just the first domino, I think, to fall as far as that goes.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good.
It's also not good. French ex-minister of finance admits to lying about a Swiss bank account. Here's a fellow whose name I will not try to pronounce, but it's very French. Trust me on that. He announced that he has had for the last 20 years or so a Swiss bank account that he has used specifically to hide assets away from France's high tax rate. It gets a little better. I want to tell you about this, though. This same fellow,
we need a video camera.
This
I'm
same
shaking
fellow
my head.
2 weeks ago had to resign from the socialist government because of his Swiss bank account. So he was very much in tune with the socialist government, except for the money that he had in the Swiss bank
account.
So here's
my question. Where is he now? Is he in Switzerland with his money?
Yeah, I don't know. He does not have a job. And the money in Switzerland only amounted to 600,000 euros, which is no small amount, but it's certainly nothing to retire on.
Yeah, no, you can't do that. Unless you ask Bloomberg, there's a report out, and actually you ask the President Obama's budget plan, which will be unveiled on April 10th, will prohibit taxpayers from accumulating more than $3 million in an individual retirement account. This proposal will generate $9 billion in revenue for the Treasury over the next decade, according to the White House statement. And here's the part that I want, what made me think of bringing this into the conversation, Scott, was that the, let's see, where is it? It's quoted, here we go. Under current rules, some wealthy individuals are able to accumulate millions of dollars in these accounts, substantially more than is needed to fund reasonable levels of retirement savings, the statement said. I can't say it with any more sarcasm than that. Pardon me. Excuse me. Who is this release statement from the White House? Who are they to say how much is an appropriate amount for somebody to have for their retirement in their IRA savings? So I guess the theory or the if this goes through, which I doubt it will, but if it went through, you wouldn't be able to have more than $3 million in your account, and they would force you then to take anything in excess of that out each year, subject to tax, which is why it would be a revenue item with the budget.
I would think that would bode well for annuities.
Annuities, tax sheltered or tax-free investments, but of course they're going to try to clamp down on municipal investing as well. I guess it does take more than the 600 euros, Scott, but it better not be more than 3 million or our leaders in Washington don't want you to have more than that in your IRA.
All right.
So that's my report on that.
All right. Going back to around the world headlines, Vladimir Putin, who the Russian president, as I'm sure you know.
I bet he has a Swiss bank account, too.
Well, he is working very, very hard to de-offshore Russia's economy. He basically has told all civil servants that they have until July 1st to file declarations of income and assets, which will be subject to stringent checks, and basically says, listen, if you have any assets overseas, you need to repatriate them post-haste. He apparently is very serious about it.
Yeah, but he's not talking about his accounts, so go ahead.
Yeah, probably not his accounts. However, this also does not appear to be likely to go through their version of legislature. The lower house, called the Duma, is supposed to read these things three times and have them approved all three. The first time they read it, it got approved, and then they kind of stopped reading it. And there's no timetable for them to read it. So I don't think that'll happen, but You know, it's repatriation of assets is becoming a very important topic in this smaller and smaller world.
It is. And, you know, I was just thinking as you were reading that, Scott, that Putin could come out and say, you know, as president, I have no Swiss bank accounts. Maybe as prime minister, I do.
He
back and forth between the two roles. You know?
And also a terrific hoarder of gold, from what I understand.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Well, that's good to know.
Yep. Going back to Brazil, as we discussed earlier, there's a gentleman down there named Ike Batista, who a year or so ago was really pounding his chest about how he was going to become the world's wealthiest man, who was telling everybody, watch out, I'm coming from behind you and I'm going to pass you. You don't even know what happened.
He's going to catch Carlos Slim.
He was. He's not anymore. He was, at the time, the richest man in Brazil. He fell all the way to number four, the poor fellow. He had an estimated net worth of about $35 billion. His net worth is now down to about $9 billion. The reason for his collapse in net worth is exactly what we talked about. He has been building companies based on the natural resources of Brazil, also building a shipping port to get him from Brazil to China. Well, he can't get the port built, and it's just a disaster. So,
and he found out the boat's too slow.
Yeah, so he has lost a lot of money over the last year or so. Really, it's a tremendous amount of money over the last year, and I think probably a lot of people who saw him on CNBC with his arrogance, as I did, chuckled a little at that headline.
Well, and I'll bet that if push comes to shove, he could get now a Boeing jet. The 787s are ready to go because they now have airline battery repair kits that they are sending out. And that is reflecting the FDA's optimism. And they're going to give him approval to get going within a couple weeks.
Well, that's good. They need that, too. That stock really did not sell off as hard as I would have expected it to on the battery debacle.
Well, the question is, will it respond and jump up?
Yeah, we'll see. Very dependent on defense spending there. And then my final headline from around the world, Greece has decided that they're going to sell their railroads. You know, they're working hard to privatize a lot of their national assets. They have to. It's part of their bailout deal. They're trying to get as much money as they can to make sure that they can keep the economy going and pay back bondholders and so forth.
Or at least pay the interest.
Yep. So they've decided that they are going to take the entire railroad system, with the exception of the high-speed rail that goes in and out of Athens, and sell it. They want one bidder rather than breaking it up, and they hope to have the deal closed by the first part of 2014.
Well, you know who has a real hankering for railroads, don't you?
Warren Buffett.
Maybe he'll put a bid in.
Perhaps he will.
He could build a transoceanic rail system and just go, hey, circle the globe.
All right.
All right. How about that? That's good stuff, isn't it? Oh, we have fun here. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And we are back, keeping you informed and some of the cutting-edge stuff that Scott likes to report on, especially in the technology department. Hey, here's a real quick update. I know you will love, Scott. This will make your day. A Best Buy deal looks smart for Samsung. So here's the deal. Samsung is going to start putting, what they call them, experience shops in 1,400 Best Buy stores, and it sent Best Buy stock up 16% on the news, and that reflects rekindled hope that someone may finally find a good use for all those big blue boxes besides Scott Connor.
Yeah, we'll see. The stock's been on a good run, particularly the past week, and I think they have a lot of space since they really have no need to sell CDs anymore.
Well, they've got lots of space, and Samsung has its Galaxy smartphones account for 71% of its operating profit, which is interesting because they don't have the thing that its big rival of Apple has, which is a retail presence. So this is seen as maybe not only good for Best Buy, but good for Samsung.
Yeah, we'll see. It's they obviously have to do something in the boardroom battle about whether or not they have privatized continues. I told you last fall about the big heist of Canadian maple syrup. You may recall that.
I do remember that. That was a sad day.
I want to say this for my friends in Maine, whom I adore, all of every one of them. They're having a lot of problems with sap being, let's call it, pirated from trees in Maine. People are sneaking onto private land, drilling holes in trees, deep holes, and more than they should, putting PVC pipes in them and basically stealing the sap out of other people's trees. The once they boil it down and turn it into maple syrup, it's good for about $50 a gallon.
Wow.
So the problem is not only that they're stealing the sap, but they're drilling these holes into these beautiful maple trees that are used for veneer and furniture and things like that. They're over-tapping them, so they're just ruining the wood. And apparently it's a pretty big problem in Maine. These thieves, literally sticky-fingered fellows. Hopefully they'll take care of that. We talked last week about Bitcoin. Remember that discussion?
You're not going to let me comment on the... You kept right on going. You said, I'm not going to let David comment on the maple syrup.
You remember we talked about Bitcoin?
All right. Yes, I do.
And whether or not Bitcoin was a legitimate currency. Bitcoin, you may recall, is basically an electronic global currency that is completely free market traded. Well, there's one big exchange for Bitcoin currency. It's called Mt. Gox. It's in Tokyo. They do about 80% of the volume. They were hacked last week, basically the reverse of the old pump-and-dump scheme. The hackers were selling the Bitcoin at the highest level of the exchange, and then they basically shut down the servers. When the servers reopened, everybody sold, the price plunged, and they went ahead and bought it back. So very, very, very unregulated currency there. And although I think we'll continue to hear more and more about it, I think it's a long way away from being legitimate.
Well, it's funny you reported that, because I was in your office the other day, and we were watching an interview on MSNBC or one of the other cable outlets, and I said to Scott, I said, look there's a guy from Bitcoin. He was up there talking, and they were interviewing him, and he says, oh, and somebody said, well, what if you're hacked? He goes, oh, no, we won't be hacked. We're fine. And then this happens. I mean, almost like on cue.
Yeah, well, this was specifically the exchange, not Bitcoin itself, but it still is a significant problem, and they can't have all these unregulated exchanges all over the world that apparently don't have very solid security. We have not talked about the city of Sacramento, who was approved by the federal judge last week to go ahead and enter their bankruptcy. This is a very important case because there are two main creditors for the city of Stockton. One is CalPERS, which is the California State Pension System. The other is the bondholders. And the bondholders are saying, hey, we get paid first. And CalPERS is saying, oh, no, no, there's a state law in California that says we get paid first. So the theory now is that CalPERS will get paid dollar for dollar on what it's owed, which is something in the vicinity of $900 million. And bondholders may get significantly less, somewhere from 15 to 20 cents on the dollar. So obviously this will be wrangled in court for a significant
period. So this is Sacramento?
This is Stockton.
Stockton. So here's the obvious question. Why in the world would anybody ever lend money to them again?
Well, part of the bonds were insured. As you know, you can insure municipal bonds. So those aren't really the problem. And I think if you continue to get insured bonds, you know, that gives you some level of stability, although you have to know the strength of your insurer. But it's going to be hard for them, and they're going to have to pay a very high rate on their interest on any bonds they issue.
I still wouldn't do it. In fact, I wouldn't do it on a matter of principle. That's just crazy.
Well, fortunately, the bond market is tremendous, so you don't have to stick with stock.
What, $80, $90 trillion?
Yep. And then I wanted to tell you about an interesting business that I saw on a startup this week that's trying to introduce a new thought on immigration reform. This company is called Blue Seed. They have all of 5 employees, but they're aggressively looking for venture capital money. What Blue Seed does is they want to build slightly offshore, basically a village for startup entrepreneurs off the coast of San Francisco. The thought being that people can live off there. It's in international waters, so they don't have to be residents, but they can still get business and tourism visas to come in and out of the country to do business as they see fit. And so we'll see what happens there. It's an interesting way to approach it.
How far offshore? It's not Alcatraz, is it?
No, they have to get far enough off to be within international waters.
How far is that? Isn't it 3 miles?
It's not 12 far.
Miles,
yeah,
14
it's
miles. It's not very far. Okay, well, we're going to do just a quick trip. We're going to do one more quick break, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week, I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
And we are back. So, any final thoughts, Scott?
I just want to tell you one quick story. I know it's only April, but I really want to tell you this one. This is probably go down as the year's dumbest marketing move. Even though it's only April, I think we can go ahead and put this one. And it's from Target. You may have heard this on the broad news, but Target was posting on their website some dresses, and the small dress, the petite size dress, they said was colored a dark heather gray, but then when they changed the exact same dress to larger sizes, the color changed to be called manatee gray.
That's bad.
That's terrible.
That is just bad. You know what that is? That's somebody really, either really dumb or really messing with people.
Well, I think certainly some jobs were changed there, and boy, the Twitter sphere blew up on that one. As a matter of fact, the entire thing was brought to light by a Target shopper named Susan Clemens, who noticed the discrepancy on the website and got right on her social media, including Twitter, and sent out a picture of it. And the next thing you know, here we are in Ormond Beach talking about it.
So that went from one color named gray to another color named
gray. Exact same dress.
So if it was blue, would it have been like periwinkle blue and then whale blue? I mean, come on.
I leave the remainder of the conversation to you.
No, that's I don't want to share anymore. Although advisors now, according to the Securities Exchange Commission, can tweet.
Terrific.
Isn't that wonderful news? So, Scott, we're going to expect you on a regular basis to tweet to the greater Volusia and Flagler County communities all of the various activities that you would like them to know that we're doing over here at
Holland Financial. Yes, I am terribly busy managing portfolios.
I will not ask you to do that because I think the jury is still out on whether that's smart. But the regulators are saying, you know, maybe we will let advisory firms use social media to communicate not so secret stuff. It's okay for you to talk to people about that.
They also announced that they are allowing public companies to make dissemination of financial results and things like that via social media rather than specifically the earnings calls and some of the more traditional evidence.
And they said, the regulator said, it's just too much work for the consumer to have to keep track of multiple outlets. So we'll just let them tweet to their heart's content.
And consumers didn't read annual reports anyway.
Come on now. That's not fair, Scott. That you know that everybody reads that prospectus? All right. And speaking of which, why do we think that? Because advisors in general think that clients know more than they do. Advisors, according to a Financial Advisor magazine report, said that advisors were three times more likely to describe their clients as very knowledgeable. And the investors said, no, not so much. 42% of advisors said their clients were very knowledgeable, and only 12% of investors said they're very knowledgeable. And 1% of advisors said their clients were unknowledgeable about investing, but 25% of investors said that they had no knowledge. So there's a big disparity, and Accenture weighed in on this, and they said, you know, our research suggests that financial advisors need to focus better on understanding their clients' views and objectives to foster closer, more trusting relationships.
Always good advice.
Thank you for that very timely and salient news point. Scott, I think that's all the time we've got today. Any final thoughts?
No, sir.
You're going to get back in there and manage your portfolios and do a good job?
Yes,
are doing
sir.
A good job. We're proud of that. And ladies and gentlemen, that's all the time we have for today's program. Thank you for joining us, and be sure to tune in next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.